So if you've never been a part of one of our football Sundays, I will tell you now, it'll be loud. It'll look a lot different in here, but it's a time where we intentionally try to engage people who may not know a lot about Jesus, may not know if they're into this whole God thing, Bible thing, but maybe a friend that you've been wanting to invite with you to church. This is going to be the easiest Sunday because here's what, you ready for this? Hey, we're going to watch football clips and not listen to my pastor preach. Christmas time is here. So depressing. I was nervous about today's sermon. It is going to be bad. No, but that really is the sales pitch. It's, hey, we're going to be watching some. It's interesting when we see these rich and famous people that we think they have a life that we want to achieve, a life without problems, a life without situations that they have to struggle with, go through, figure out. And then you find out being rich doesn't exempt you from the world's problems. And just because you're really talented in one thing and someone will pay you a lot of money and other people want your autographs and you're fighting for a certain ring, it doesn't mean that you still don't have relational conflicts. It doesn't mean that you can't have the loss of a child. It doesn't mean you don't experience disappointment. So this is also one, if you have younger people in your life that are still just trying to figure out what to do with life, this is a great Sunday for you to invite them. So I just, normally what we do is we have these little touch cards that we encourage you to take out with you this week in order to help remind you to invite people next week. But here's the thing. Some people may not want to come live, so make sure to point them towards the website, point them towards our app. They can be a part of our online campus, which, by the way, online campus, good morning to you. If you're there right now and you can find your little football emoji, throw it up there, and the next 3 minutes while you're looking down, swiping away, I'll just keep talking. So, but it's just an easy way to invite people to church, either virtually or with us live. We want you to do that. Then the next thing I want you to do, if you have your phone right now, feel free to pull it out. If you do not have our church app, make sure to take a moment to download our church app. If you have been here over the last couple weeks, you know this, that in the sermon notes, you can find a PDF file right now to be praying with us all week long. And we've been meeting up on Wednesdays here at the church to do a night of prayer. This week, we will not be doing that. That was just for the month of January. But if there is someone in your life, and I guess I'll go ahead and announce what we're talking about today, we're talking about those in your life who are lost, those who are in your life who do not know Jesus. Some people would put the title sinners on them still and not saints. I don't want to just put that label because here's the thing, I sin all the time, but I'm saved by grace. And so knowing and having this relationship with Jesus Christ, if there's someone in your life that you would just love to know that your eternal soul is secure in Jesus Christ, you want to download this week's PDF and just be praying in your own life once a day about who, kind of directionally for them and for their life. And then that's all the announcements I have. So you guys ready for the day? Kind of jump in today's sermon. I'm going to pause so post-ed it's easier. You're welcome. Hey, welcome to Navigation Church. Here we are on our final week of Still Moving. In this Still Moving conversation today, we're going to be talking about the lost, those who don't know Jesus. But before we jump into that, I have a couple questions for you. What do you think about when you think about you? Is that too deep, too fast? It may be. Okay. What do you think about when you think about you? And I think there's a couple things that you kind of wrestle through. You think, when you think about you, you think about how you've been doing like today. So if you woke up on time and maybe you pulled out the app, you downloaded the sermon notes, opened up a PDF and did a little prayer for someone, and then you know what you did this morning? You did 15 push-ups, 2 crunches, you counted it as exercise because you're sweating already. Like you feel good about yourself. You got to work on time, you didn't scream at the kids, you refused to kick the cat, although you don't know why you ever got this thing, and you got your work done on time. As you drove home, even though someone cut them off, you didn't signal them to heaven. Like you did really good today. And so when you think about you, is there a chance you think about you depending on how you did that day? And how you acted, how you believe. When you think about you, do you think about you about how other people think about you? Like, are your friends happy with you? If you're young enough, how are mom and dad happy with you that you made your bed and you did all the things you were supposed to do? Do you think about yourself in the context of how society thinks about you? Because after all, right, like if you're a Christian right now, then you guys, like you're part of this group of people that just you're turned off to every other people group that doesn't believe like you, and you're almost fine with segregating yourself from those sinners of the world as long as those saints in the church can continue to meet. Like when you think about you, do you think about you about how you did that day, maybe how your friends perceive you in that moment, or how the society around you labels you? How do you think when you think about you? So let's take this another step. What do you think about when you think about God? When it comes to the concept of God, what do you think about? Do you think of this guy sitting on this big magnificent throne with a smile on his face, with a scowl? Does he have a big long sweet flowing beard with a robe? What color is your God? Is he white? Is he black? Is he somewhere in between? I hear giggling from all you white people out there because you've seen all the pictures and all the houses all these years and all the Bibles. I mean, nevertheless, he's from the Middle East and he probably was. Okay, but like, what color is your God when you think about God? When you think about God, what do you think about? I'm like wrecking some of your theologies right now, and this is just the opening. Does your guy have blue eyes or black eyes? That tells me his skin color right there. Okay, so like, what do you think about? Do you think about a God who waits for you to mess up just so he can send discipline your way, struggles your way? Do you think about a God with a big heart wanting to reach out to you and love you anytime you're hurting? Do you think about God as a statue holding his heart with the thumb out? There's like 9 of you that are going to get that joke, but I decided to put it in there anyway. And if you're laughing, you shouldn't have seen it. So, like, when you think about God, what do you think about? Okay, final question. Ready for this one? This one's a little harder. If you're taking notes, good luck keeping up with it. Here it is. When you think about God thinking about you, what does God think about when he thinks about you?
Say it again.
One more time. Yeah. You do it one more time. Like, for those in our online campus, I feel really bad for our moderators right now because they're like trying to throw you that note. But when you think about God thinking about you, what does God think about when he thinks about you? Do you think when God thinks about you, he's thinking about you some of the ways you think about you? And when you think about you, you think how you did that day. So when God's thinking about you, he's just thinking, did you behave? Did you cut anyone off? Did you read your daily Bible? Did you take communion? Were you nice to your wife? Were you good to your kids? And if you were all those things, the way you think that God thinks when God thinks about thinking about you, it was, God's happy with me because I did good today. Yeah. Is that what God thinks about when he thinks about you? Do you think, you don't have to answer yet, and if you said no, you're ruining my sermon. Stay with me a little bit longer. Like, but good job on you. Like, when you think about God thinking about you, does God think about you according to how other people perceive you should be behaving? Like, when you look at, does he get his cues off of friends and those around me, and am I doing everything I'm supposed to with them? And if other people around me are happy with me, when I think about God, he's probably happy with me because the world seems to be happy with me. Or do you maybe put it through a filter of this? Because the way we view our world, it's through a filter. And our filter is built on a lot of different things. And one of the things our world is built on is the filter that society tries to put on us. So when we think about God thinking about us, how does he think about us? Is it through the world that the filter that the world's trying to be on, try to place on us? And so did we, ready for this? Everyone stick your toes. I'm just going to step on everybody's toes. Ready? Did we vote for the right person? Did we support the right movement? Did the thing I say, was it racist or did I bring unity to? All of a sudden, we start having all these filters that society tries to put on us to label how we're supposed to be, how we're supposed to think, and what we're supposed to do in the world around us. And when God, let's say it this way, is God happy with me or mad at me if I was politically correct? So I think the question I have today, when we talk about the lost, when we talk about people who don't know Jesus, I think one of the things we need to wrestle with is this concept here. What does God think about when God thinks about me? And in order to do that, I'm going to go ahead and put it into a concept of, let's talk about what God thinks about when God thinks about those who don't know him. Because if he thinks about that for those who don't know him, how much more does he think about us who do know him? Because at one point, and I don't know if you know this, if you don't know this, you need to know this, there was a time in your life where you didn't know Jesus. Now, you might have been raised in church and you've always been around church, but there was a moment in time, most likely, where you had a personal revelation from mom and dad's information and all this kind of illumination that you lived with in your life. There was a time where you had this personal revelation as Jesus as yourself, but before you had that personal revelation of what he thought about you, there was an actual thought process that he had about you. And so we're going to jump into Matthew chapter 15. And by the way, we're going to run. Last week, it was a long time till we got to the Bible. This week, we're going to spend a lot of time in the Bible, and we're going to cover a lot of ground. And not all of it I'm going to read to you. So if you don't believe what it is I'm saying to you, please go read it for yourself. And why don't you just do this? Plan on me not telling you the truth. Go read it for yourself. It's a really good habit for you just to kind of open this up. Matthew chapter 15 starts like this. It says, now the tax collectors and the sinners were gathered around Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered. By the way, if there's any word that you can like use in social media this week, try to figure out how to use the word muttered. Every time I read it this week, I was like, there's a word we need to bring back. I'm just needing to move on. Here they mutter, this is man, welcome sinners and eats with them. Like, they're just, can you believe it? There's no good Jesus guy. Can you believe he's eating around with all these sinners and all these tax collectors and these holy people that are just muttering about who he is? And then Jesus told this parable. So let's do this. Let's pause right here at the beginning. And I need you in today's entire conversation. Let's do this. Let's imagine we're sitting in a house with Jesus right now. Okay, not the story that you know, not the parables, which by the way, if you don't know what parables are, these are made up stories to bring about real life principles. Let's not act like you know them. Let's process through them with Jesus in the environment that he's sitting in. So right now, Jesus, and I guess for today, I'm playing Jesus. It's a big role of a lifetime. Like, I want to thank all of those who supported me. Like that was an Oscar. If anyone cares, thank you. Like, I guess this would be a Tony. And they're playing me off over here. So, okay, now you have Jesus sitting in this house, and all of us. By the way, you're all sitting in this house with Jesus right now, and Jesus is going to start talking. And there's a group, and we need to pick a group of Pharisees. This one, we got to go to my left. Why? Because the joke wasn't funny earlier. So here's a group of Pharisees over there, and it doesn't matter. Let's put them back here, right? You've got this group of Pharisees, and by the way, these are the religious leaders of the day, and all of a sudden, the rest of you come into this house. It's a huge house, by the way. Like, the rest of you come into this house, and by the way, like, you're a tax collector, which means you're a Jewish man working for a Roman government taxing Jewish people, and the way you make your money is by overtaxing and stealing. And you have like women who you know that at 9 o'clock at night when everybody should be asleep, they're walking the street, all right? You have all these sinners, and these guys over here, man, they're drunks. They're always drinking, and they're just party animals all the time. So you have all these religious people back here going, I cannot believe Jesus is sitting around with this group of people here. And so Jesus goes, hey, I'm going to tell you a couple parables. And if you don't know anything about the parables, usually inside the parables, Jesus is going to pin you to one part of the story. And so as he goes to tell the parable, everyone, all of us are thinking this, I wonder who I am. I wonder who I am in this story. So Jesus goes, I want to tell you this story. I'm going to tell you a story about this lost sheep. By the way, there was a shepherd, and by the way, all of us in this moment, the main source of revenue is going to be being shepherds, and there's fishermen, and there's those who make tents. Like, there's only a couple professions out there. No one is writing code for Google at this time. So shepherds is a pretty high profession, so we all know these shepherds. And all of a sudden, the shepherd lost one of his sheep, or can we say this? He lost 1% of his revenue. And the shepherd's looking around and he can't find the sheep. So the shepherd leaves this pen and he leaves the 99 in order to go find this sheep that he's lost. And he's looking all over this open field, because in the open field, everybody knows this. You could have animals get to him, lions and bears, oh my. Like, they could attack these things. Someone else from another kind of shepherding field could steal them. Robbers could take them, and that's their dinner for the night. So everybody knows this is a really big deal, but he actually leaves these 99 in a pen to go out and search for the one. And Jesus ends this parable by saying this way, he found the sheep. He found this one lost sheep that was out there. And I tell you the same way that there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than the 99 righteous people who did not repent. So Jesus is now telling this story, and you have all these Pharisees back there going, am I the lost? Because he just said there's 99 who didn't. And you have the rest of us going, okay, who am I in this story? But if we just try to figure out who we are in the story, we miss the bigger picture of what Jesus is trying to say. Because what does God think about when God thinks about you? That even though there's 99 around him, he will leave them. Ready? If you've been around church at all, you know what I'm about to say here. It's two numbers. Ready? He will leave for the one. He will leave for the one. And this one, by the way, didn't destroy his business. He wouldn't have lost everything. But that one being lost was his everything. So Jesus went after the lost. And Mitch, by the way, if you don't know what this looks like, you leave and you go into the open field. And this is where I just say, let's think about what we know about when it comes to being a shepherd. The first thing you have to do is begin listening for the cry. Because you just start venturing out. And those who are lost, and by the way, for those of us who, can we say this, that are found, who know Jesus, this is a principle that we need to hear for ourselves. It's simply this, is, are we hearing the cries of those who are lost? They don't know it. They could be out having fun, and they're running, and they're jumping, and they're not in a fence, and they're eating all these different things. But what they don't know is that there's danger lurking right around the corner. Or are they stuck somewhere? Did they get their leg put into a little, like, what? Actually, here's a picture that came to mind. Years ago, I was mowing the grass at this house I own, and I heard the weirdest and the strangest noise. And I turned off my mower, and I'm like, what am I hearing? And all of a sudden, I realized I heard a fawn stuck. Its leg was stuck in some fencing right on the edge of my property. And you could hear this cry, and it was so distinguishable, my next-door neighbor who was inside actually came out. Or are they stuck in something that they don't know how to get out of, and they're crying for help, and then the mother's nowhere to be found? Why? Because what looks like to be a predator is in the area, and everyone's hiding. End of the story. I got the little fawn out. It ran away. I saved a deer's life. You're welcome. But... and which, by the way, the mom was sitting in this little patch of trees right next to me, and when she jumped up, I tinkled a little. It scared me so bad. Boom, she was gone. I mean, not enough to change, but enough to, like, get your attention. Like, scared me. And so there's some of you like, that's why you mow with a bow. Like, I know right now, you're ready to get them. But when it comes to those that are lost and those that are stuck and those that, can we hear their cry? And then this is when the next part of my story, I'm going to tell you, it may get a little graphic, but it's the way my mind thinks about this, that if you're a shepherd, I believe I'm an expert tracker because of the amount of Discovery Channel I watch. I myself have never actually done it, but I've watched other people do it. And you know what? One of the things that I've noticed that when people go out, they look for something called game trails. Do you know what those are? Like the common path. And when they come across the game trails, there's something on there called droppings. And you can know how close you are to an animal by the dropping. Not because, oh, there's poop here, they may be close. Is the poop dry? Or is it wet? Because if it's wet, it probably happens sooner than later. Are you guys with me? If not, I have a Bear Grylls clip that I'm going to show you. It's him tracking elephants. And it was so moist, he could actually squeeze it and drink liquid out of it. You guys want to... you don't want to see that clip. Hey, we're going to skip that clip. Apparently, that's not happening. And I've tried that. No, I haven't. But But one of the things you have to know, that when you're actually out looking to help seek that which is lost, sometimes the best way to do it is actually get in their mess. And it's one thing to stand off and go, oh, that looks dirty, or oh, that looks stinky, or oh, that looks like a bad situation. It's another thing to get down in there and get dirty with them. Because I'm willing to find this, and I'm willing to touch this, and I'm willing to see how fresh this is, this wound, this life struggle that you're going through, in order for me to get as close to you as possible. And then when the shepherd found him, he did something absolutely amazing. He didn't say, where have you been? He didn't put a choke collar around this thing and drag it all the way back and jerk it like it's some bad pet not doing what it had to. You know what the shepherd did? The shepherd put this thing on his shoulder and provided for them what they couldn't give themselves. And that's a journey to safety. So what does God think about when he thinks about the lost? I'm willing to leave that which I'm familiar with. I'm willing to get in the wide open. I'm willing to listen to where the pains are coming from. I'm willing to get inside of your mess. And no matter how dirty you are, no matter how clean you are, no matter how broken you are, no matter how whole you are, he's willing to put him on your shoulder and come back and say to everyone, look what I found. That which is lost has been found. That's what God thinks about when he thinks about the lost. What do you think he still thinks about you? And then Jesus, now you have some people sitting around. Remember, they're trying to figure out who they are in this parable right now. And Jesus goes, let me tell you the story about a coin. There's this woman who had this coin, but she lost it inside of her house. And so rather than saying, oh, the coin is lost, no big deal, I can move on, I have some other coins over here, the woman starts tearing the house apart. She starts, by the way, you know how this works when you lose your phone. You start retracing all of your steps. Where have I been? Where did I go? Were you on the couch? You don't just look at the couch, you do what? You start pulling out every single cushion, and you think to yourself, oh, I had a cookie. You look inside the cookie jar, and not only is the phone not in there, neither are the cookies, because you ate them all, and like you feel bad about that, now you feel bad about your phone, and you start retracing all of your steps, and you start looking, you start looking, you start looking, and then it comes this way, and it says, finally she found the coin, and in verse 10 it says, in the same way, I tell you that there's rejoicing in the presence of angels of God over one sinner who repents. And the more I've thought about this before, and by the way, if you're ever a part of our growth track here at the church, and this is the way you get connected here at the church, or some churches may call it their membership classes. We call it our growth track because we want you to find freedom. We want you to discover what you've been created for. We want to help connect you, and we want to release you into a destiny that God has for you. And I've told this story, when you go through our growth track, which, by the way, pretty soon we're going to be able to offer that virtually, so we're not just sitting here on a Sunday morning. And going through this growth track, I remember one story that I told that reminds me about this right here. Years ago, there was a grocery store just right up the road from here. And my wife took our, I don't know if it was all of our kids, but I know one kid specifically by the name of Gideon. She goes to this grocery store to buy a couple things. And partway through, she noticed that Gideon was no longer next to her. And so she's kind of looking around, trying to find Gideon. And if you've ever been a bad parent and lost a kid before, raise your hand. Let us, like, judge you real quick. Thank you. I am. Like, something happens. You're like, hey, Gideon. And you do that thing where you pick one side and you walk the whole length of the grocery store doing a quick glance down every aisle. Well, what Cammy didn't know was Gideon heard her calling for him and thought, oh, we're playing hide and seek. So Gideon decided to get behind a bunch of toilet paper and now hide from mom. And so Cammy did this like quick kind of walk down, and as she's walking down, kind of looking down the aisles, other people are noticing that she's looking for a kid, and it's like, hey, it's our cute kid. It's our cute kid. It's the one that's really talented in sports. Like we know who this one. It is wrong, and if my other boy wasn't here right now, I wouldn't keep the jokes going, but we'll talk later at home or with the counselor. And then something really cool happened in the sense that Cammy was now getting aggravated, no longer caring about the cart, walking up and down, yelling a little louder. She apparently got loud enough that the store, you should try this sometime, the store actually locks the entire thing down. No one's allowed to leave till they find this kid. And it's pretty, you feel pretty special in the moment. You're like, wow, You know, and someone's like, I have to get home. Someone's dying. They're like, you can't leave because you may have a kid. Like, it's just an amazing thing that they do. And now everybody in the store is looking for this kid named Gideon, except not everybody cares like Cammie cares. You know why? It's not their kid. And I know that even as Cammie was telling me that, I was getting angry that other people didn't care as much about our thing that they did if it was their kid. But the thing about us, when it came to losing a kid, we were completely distracted by that which was lost. And if it's a coin, if it's a kid, or if it's a lost one, we're completely distracted by that which is lost, and so distracted that we'll begin pulling other people in of, you have to look for this with me. You have to seek this for me. You have to find this for me. Because for you, it may be, oh, that person doesn't know Jesus, but for me, it's a brother. For me, it's a sister. It's my mom. It's my dad. It's my childhood friend we went all through high school. Well, do you want to go out and play? No, I don't want to leave. Well, you got three other kids at home. Aren't you happy? No, because the one is the one I want to embrace again. And so when it comes to Jesus, we take our cue off of Jesus on this. When it came to the lost coin, he was completely distracted by that which was lost. It doesn't matter how much more money he had. He searched for it until he found it again. Which, by the way, at Navigation Church, you're going to find out, maybe you're new to us, maybe you've been connected for a while, we are completely distracted by that which is lost. Next Sunday, when you come here for Football Sunday, we are going to be showing a video in order for people to connect. But not only that, went and got a bunch of football gear just to lay out, tackling dummies and outfits, just to make the environment look different. In years past, we would throw stuff out to people, and we're probably not doing that year because I'm not sure if people in this COVID environment, hey, who wants a football? Like, I can see why you may not want that, but normally we have snacks and we have drinks, and I don't want to give all that up, so how can we do that in a safe way? And we're going to provide this entire environment for one thing, because we're distracted by people who don't know Jesus. And we'll do something different. It may feel different. It may look different, but at the end of the day, it's so that we can get our hands on the coin. And that's what Jesus thinks about when he thinks about us. He's completely distracted when we're lost. So then, okay, so now we're all sitting around. You got your religious people back here. You got your saints sitting in front of us. Jesus goes, by the way, I got another story. And if you know this story, so many times it's known as the prodigal son. How many have heard that before? But you don't know the story, so we're going to give it a new title. Here's the new title, the party that no one wanted to go to. Okay, and so Jesus, he goes, hey, let me tell you about this boy. He had a brother and a really rich dad. And there was a time where this one boy came up to the dad and said, Dad, just so you know I'm not the oldest born. And so there's going to be a day that you die, and I'm not even going to get like the lion's share of the inheritance. The older boy gets that. But Dad, I don't know how to say this to you. You're just not dying fast enough. And so Dad, like, I really want you to die so I can have your stuff, but since you just are as healthy as a horse and you keep going and you keep expanding, here's what I'm wondering. Could we go ahead and act like you have died? And I could go ahead and get my portion of the inheritance right now. And by the way, if you've never heard this parable before, this is because we're sitting around hearing it for the first time, and I'm telling you it a little different, but it is the actual heartbeat of what it is. The son saying, you are more valuable to me dead than you are alive. Can I have your stuff? And so it wasn't like Dad just wrote him a check because he had sheep and he had servants and he had these all this stuff that he kind of had to liquidate and figure out and do the math. And at one point he came and he gave his son just one lump sum. And he said, okay, son, there you go. And the son said, thanks, Dad. By the way, I'm also leaving now because not only do I just want your stuff, I want nothing to do with you. So this son leaves and go to this different distant land. And the son, man, he starts throwing parties and he's hiring the biggest DJ. Marshmello showed up. Like, it was huge. And had these DJs. That was for nine of you that aren't, like, too old and white. So, like, he had all these, he had these DJs. He had these parties. He went out and bought the latest Ferrari. And Ferrari was just 12 horses in a cart. But it was, like, huge. And it was massive. And it was just this huge party. And he had all this stuff. And he had the nicest robes. And all of a sudden, he was, like, going through money. And it was in good investment. And it, the problem was he invested in a website that blocked him later, and so he lost all his money. That seemed too Robin Hood on the point. So like all of a sudden, this money that he had started drifting away, and he realized, man, I didn't have as much cash as I thought. But then a famine came through. And he wasn't making any money. He was only selling money, and he bought too much stuff, and he still owed all these taxes. And he got to the point where he started having to liquidate all of his stuff, and he started liquidating all his stuff and still running out of cash. And he ended up finding out that he's just flat broke. And all of these people sitting around listening to this story went right now, this is the worst kid ever. Like, how could you do this to your Jewish dad? And then Jesus, this Jewish rabbi, adds one more caveat to this Jewish story. He goes, and by the way, the only job that this Jewish boy could get was to go feed pigs. And collectively, everyone would have went, oh, I love you guys right now. That was fantastic. I almost said, hey, those online, just go type in, oh, because they did it. They nailed it. Like, why? Because these were unclean animals. There's no way this Jewish boy, this Jewish rabbi, and this Jewish dad is telling us that he went to work for pigs. You can't get any lower. It can't get any worse. And there was a day the son said, what am I doing? Actually, here's exactly how he said it in verse 17. He came to his senses. Here's another way to say it. He had an aha moment of, I'm an idiot. What am I doing? How many of my father's hired servants, they have food to spare? Like, they put stuff in Tupperware at the end of the day, and they have a snack in the middle of the night. I'm looking at this slop that I'm handing to these pigs thinking, can I eat this myself? My father's hired servants have food to spare. I'm starving to death. I have an 8-pack, and I don't want that. I'm so hungry. And he goes, you know what? I'm going to set out, go back to my father, and say to him, Father, I have sinned against you. Okay, wait, we got to pause real quick because we need to ask this question. What do you think about when you think about God and God thinking about you? Because here in this moment, you have a son wanting to have a conversation with his dad, so he needs to try to think about what the dad is thinking about when the dad is thinking about the son. And so he says to him, I'm going to go back to my father, and I'm going to get my script ready. And by the way, you guys all know this. We get scripts ready. You're going into a meeting that you don't want to go to. Hey, teenagers, you're showing up late to home past your curfew, so you got to have the story ready for your mom and dad, right? Like, we all get these scripts ready. So this son is trying to figure out what I need to say because I know what my father thinks about when my father thinks about me. So he says this, I'm just going to go and say, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. Because, Dad, I know that when you think about me, you're disappointed. You're frustrated. You want nothing to do with me. Because most holy God who sits on the heavenly throne with a big sweet beard and angels flying around and manna like chips, you're just sitting there all happy. And then there's one guy that's going to walk in with their head low and you're just going to sit there and go. Why? Because there's the filter you carry about how your dad treated you, and I'm assuming you assume that God thinks the same way. You pick up the filter of what you think about yourself and when you view yourself. Who am I? No one loves me. And since I'm not doing good, that's the same filter God looks through. God's looking through the filter like my friends do. I disappointed them. I didn't show up for them. I wasn't there for them. And if I don't do all those things, God's going to look at that same filter to me. So we have all these, oh, society, oh my gosh, what are the friends going to say? What are the family going to say? Because you know, at this point, everyone in the area knew what this son did. He was the talk of the town. He was in gossipjournal.com. Everyone knew the story.
So what is everyone else's filter? And if that's their filter, that's got to be God's filter. And the way God views me is the way that people view me, the society view me, and how I view myself. So the son said, but I have nothing else to live for. I got to try this thing. So the son said, he decided to journey home. And as he's journeying home, he's coming up the hill. And keep in mind, we're all sitting here hearing this story for the very first time. And Jesus said, the son comes up over the crest of the hill. And the dad was sitting in his favorite chair, but the chair had been repositioned. And over, in order to have a glance of the last sight that he had of his boy, hoping to one day have the first glance of the returning of his son. And the dad sees him. And this rich Jewish man gets up out of his chair, grabs his robe, tucks it up, and he does the most unbelievable thing. He takes off running. Let me just let you know, they didn't run back in those days like this. Unless there was a large animal or a burglar coming after him. But a respectable man wouldn't do this. But Jesus threw away his relentless love. Ran to his son. And the son said to the father, he said this in verse 21, Father, I have sinned against you and against heaven. Right? Because he has his speech. It's ready to go. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. And the father gets to him and goes, yeah. I know that you're about to tell me something because you think what I think about you is what you need to respond with, but I just want to say this. But the father said to the servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And the son saying, yeah, but dad, hang on a second. You don't have to do all that. I'm not done with my script because when I think about you thinking, and when you think about me, I'm ready to have a rhetorical answer. I'm ready to have a reason why I can at least be at your house. Dad, can I finish my script real quick? And dad's going, no, you can't. Here's what else I need. Not only do we have you dressed, not only because a son wears sandals, servants are barefoot, so I'm going to put a sandal on you. And the ring means that you can put signatures on things because you're still part of the family, and I'm going to dress you in something. By the way, that fatted calf that we've waited for something awesome to happen. Go ahead and kill it. My son is home. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost, but now he's found. Let's begin to celebrate. When God thinks about you, he thinks about this, your home. You think to yourself, I need to put up a filter and I have to figure out how I'm supposed to think about me now. Your home. You have to start thinking about your friends and family. Do you think when the fatted calf got killed and the party started happening, there was a single family, there was a friend or a family member who said this, does dad remember what he did? Like, do you guys know what we're partying? Because, like, by the way, the brother said this. He's like, you know he was with prostitutes, right? Like, we're celebrating the son cashed in just to go be with her. Like, this is the party that we're having right now. Do you think there was anybody in the neighborhood that said this? How do you know he's really repentant? How do you know he's really sober? How do you know he doesn't have an STD? How do you know he didn't have an abortion while he was gone? How do you know that he's not going to relapse one day? And you know what the dad said? He's home. He's home. He's home. This is what matters to me right now. It's the redemption, not the perfection. It's the redemption, not the perfection. Because the rest of us hold up this filter that the world gives us and says, you know what we have to have? We have to say everything right, and we have to watch what we post online. We have to watch what we say. We have all these filters around. And God's going, I don't care. You know what? Kill the calf. He's home. So what does God think about when God thinks about you? He's completely distracted when you're not around him. He's willing to pursue you no matter where you go. And the day that you come home, it isn't an interrogation about what you've done. It's a celebration that he can do one thing. Wrap his arms around you. And embrace you. And call you son. Call you daughter. Because he'll give it up in order to have that moment with you again. We have to stop looking through a filter of God's love of how did you do? Did you do everything you were supposed to today? Did you make everybody around you happy today? Did you live up to societal norms today? We have to get away from that do mentality to the belong mentality. We belong because Jesus loves us. So those of you that know Jesus as your personal Lord and Savior, may today be a simple reminder of God's love that you've already experienced. And what you think about when you think about God and how God thinks when he thinks about you, may it be aligned today to the truth of you're his son, you're his daughter. Because, by the way, there's a real struggling happening in this family party because you have all these religious people back here and you have all of us sitting out here that are just sinners, right? And the religious people are trying to figure out who they still are in the story. And here's what happens. The dad says, I then went out to the oldest boy. And he said, come back for our brother. Your brother is still here. And he had all this religiousness start saying this, but dad, I've never left you. I've always been here doing for you. And the dad just simply said to him, everything I've always had is yours, but you've been so focused on doing, you miss being. Being with me. Let's not miss, for those of us that have been followers of Jesus Christ, let's not miss the importance of just being in a relationship with our Father. Let's not take it for granted that we can come to church on a Sunday morning, flip on the internet, flip on our phones, flip on a podcast, and hear something. Let's not miss the value of being. But then here's my prayer today. Is the burden of the sheep, the burden of the coin, and the burden of the lost son, could we all start carrying that burden for the one? The one in your life that isn't here. The one in your life that you think about. The one in your life that God brings your way to helping up a door in order for you to have a conversation about Jesus. What if we started caring about, ready for this? This is my house. Start caring about the lost person like we do that stupid Apple remote. If you have an Apple TV, you know what I'm talking about. They literally said this, how can we invent the smallest possible remote that's as slippery as possible that can slide in and through any crack possible so that when you want to watch your TV, you have to destroy the house because no kid under the age of 12 years old simply knows how to put it back in the same spot they found it. Far be it. Like, it has to hide everywhere. And then you can go, well, I can download the app and use my phone. No, but you can't adjust your sound bar. So this is miserable. The thought of getting up and actually physically adjusting sound takes me back to my childhood with my uncle during football Sunday with his feet up. And he's like, hey, go change the channel for me. I don't want to stand up to change the channel. I want my remote. And I'm going to do everything I can so I get this remote back in my hand. And could you imagine if I lived with the same mentality of this lost one in my life who doesn't know Jesus, I'm going to rip things apart till I can once again put them till they're home. What if we carried that burden today? So let's do two altar calls here. The first altar call is simply for those who are here, those that are watching us online who do not know Jesus. I'm going to give you an opportunity to say yes to him today because I don't know what you think about when you thought about God thinking about you. But he has a relentless love that he's going to pursue you till you find him. And then the second altar call, how about those of us that have been found? We remember God's grace in our life by receiving communion together. So if you're sitting here right now, could I ask you to do me a favor? Could you just close your eyes? Or if you're not comfortable with closing your eyes, you just kind of want to put your head down. And here's why I'm going to ask you to do this. In a moment, I'm going to ask those who don't know Jesus to simply raise their hand in order as a sign of a heartward decision that they made. And sometimes looking around in a crowd this big, they could feel intimidated that everyone's looking and everyone here knows that I don't know Jesus. We just want to get rid of all that pressure. You know what we want to say? There's 99 around you that cannot wait to celebrate with you. So if you're watching us online today, or if you're sitting in here and you don't know Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior, this entire conversation is to tell you his love for you. But it even goes beyond a parable that is fake to a real life story that is true, and that is that Jesus stepped out of heaven to live on earth with mankind and actually physically die for your sins. He died on a Roman cross in order for the moment you believing in him, your price or your penalty of death would be paid in full. So does that mean one day when you die, you get to go to heaven? Absolutely. But the bigger picture that I'd like to give to you is simply this, that here on earth, you can live life to its fullest. What God has created you for. So if you're here right now and you don't know Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, with eyes closed and heads bowed, if you're ready to say yes to him today, could I ask you to simply raise your hand in the air just so that I can see that you have made that decision? And as hands are going up around this room, if you're online right now, possibly you see this. If you say yes to Jesus for the first time, make sure to like this comment, or possibly there's even a little bar that's popping up to you of, did you say this prayer for the first time? Click yes. I want to invite you to engage with us online or live right now in person by simply saying this prayer with me. Say, dear Jesus, today is the day that I recognize your relentless love. And I was once lost, but I'm now found. Forgive me of my sins. Become Lord of my life. And from this day forward, I follow you. God, I thank you for every hand that went up. I thank you for those watching online that made that decision for the first time. And we absolutely celebrate with them.